Are you looking for new gear? Problems with your current gear? Problems to solve. This is the man to solve them. We are fielding your questions. Please, please.
What else are you looking for? Are you looking for meaning in your life? Are you looking for answers about relationships? Why things are maybe the way they are? Are you looking to answer the larger questions in life, like what's maybe out there beyond
Earth,
our skies and Earth?
Earth, yeah.
These are also the time to ask these questions. Uh-huh. So, Marco, first of all, I want to apologize for having you come to work after hours. That must suck.
No, that's fine. I'm jet-lagged already, so let's go.
Yeah, just you're flying from all over. Oh, and we've got, I just want to introduce Mike. So, again, I'm Ben Williamson. I've been hosting Fat Public Access. And this is Jamie Wilkinson, proud member of Fat, and he'll be manning your tweets if you want to. What do you think people should tweet at?
Just tweet at Fat.
Yeah, at Fat. That's 5FAT. If you have any questions,
you can bookface us.
Bookface, yeah, sure. Or IRC. We're
on IRC, Fat Lab, channel on irc.freenode.net.
So we're here in iBeam. There's been many times when I've been involved with something and Marco has saved my ass by finding like the right dongle at the last minute. And you know, there's not a lot of men that I could say that about in my life.
Highly appreciated. Thank you.
How did you, I guess I've been asking a lot of, you know, I had my questions in the other panel about looking back. You've probably been involved with technology for a long time. What are some of your earliest memories of technology?
Well, first of all, I'm born in Helsinki, Finland, and I lived half my life there and half here, dual citizen. And my first sort of contact with technology related to around like 8, 9, 10, I started taking like old tube TVs apart for some weird reason, and radios, and collecting components. I didn't know what to do with them yet, but just, you know, emptying vacuums from TV tubes and playing with capacitors and that kind of stuff, and slowly started squeaking stuff and kind of early circuit bending and soldering and building musical instruments also, like basses and guitars. And
yeah, music has been a long-running theme for you, right?
Yeah.
Were you in bands and stuff when you were young?
Yeah, in Finland, and studied in Sibelius Music High School for a while. I got kind of bored with that school and quit, and then I sort of swore that I will never finish high school, but I somehow did and ended up in NYU Music Tech and ITP. And
oh, really?
Whatever, everything, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Francois K's recording studio. And
Francois K's recording studio?
Yeah.
Where's that?
It was on top of the Notorious Disco, Studio 54. He was one of my sort of idols. He produced Depeche Mode and Kraftwerk, and Madonna worked there, and CNC Music Factory and D-Light. And
well, yeah, I mean, if you know disco, you know the name Francois K.
Yeah, he's one guy. Giorgio Moroder is another. I'm planning to see him play at the Cielo Deep Space, where Francois plays, in May.
So what were you doing at Francois' studio? Are you buds? Is that your boy?
Assisting, interning, assisting sessions.
How old were you when you were doing that?
Let's see, about 15 years ago, mid-90s, along my studies, music technology studies. After that, I went to ITP. I applied to CalArts and ITP and NYU Music Technology.
So you were a real deal. You were getting course credit for...
Yeah.
Like helping produce disco records, or I suppose maybe house records at that point.
It's a mixture. I mean, there's some people there. Go Hotoda, who was he was producing stuff there, who was the Yellow Magic Orchestra's fourth member.
Whoa, cool!
Along with Ruchi Sakamoto and Yukihiro Takahashi and Haruomi Hosono.
Have you met those guys?
Go Hotoda, I met. Yeah.
Cool. YMO is awesome.
Yeah.
You listen to YMO, Jamie?
Yeah, I love YMO.
They're like the Japanese Kraftwerk, I like to say.
I'm sad to report that I'm
it's
not fine.
Sorry, putting you on the spot.
Just keep asking me questions. I won't know these bands.
Anyway. So.
What kind of cell phone do you have?
What kind of cell phone do I have?
Yeah.
Sad to report, it's an iPhone 4S. I should probably, as a proud Finn with the sister working at Nokia, I should have a Nokia, but I'm not having Nokia.
Wait, Nokia? They Finnish?
Yeah. Many people think they're from Korea or Japan, but...
Yeah, how many, what percent of Finland is employed by Nokia?
It used to be higher. I think they lost a lot of people. Right now, there's an interesting situation where a lot of young young kids or the ones who still have their brain open, they go into Yolla, which I guess gathered some people from this like Migo people and whatever, as far as I know. Or just go to other startups or gaming companies, or like Remedy is one, Rovio Angry Birds is another. It's like a big content industry in Finland.
Is there like a Silicon Valley in Finland?
Yeah, that's in Oulu. Oulu is a big city closer to Arctic Circle.
Oulu.
Oulu. Oulu, which is kind of like Finnish Silicon Valley. They've done a lot of brain research there. Cool. They've done also some interesting stuff they're working on right now with Oxford University. Is the what's the kind of like
did they get
micro facial expressions, the 1/25 second expression that 10% of people can read intuitively and can figure out if you're lying, what you're really meaning.
Cool.
So they've done software which detects those kind of small twitches.
I use it in my Google Glass.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, 80% apparently works. 80%.
Do they get the cheap server farm space like in the glaciers, like underground?
I was reading about Norway or Iceland or Greenland.
Are they that close to the Arctic Circle?
I mean, Arctic Circle is there. My family actually has like a reindeer ranch house up way up there, nearby Norwegian forest. But the reindeer farms, I'm not so knowledgeable on whether they have them there. I know there's some in Sweden and Norway. Definitely.
There used to. This is just a side note, but there used to be a bar in Williamsburg called Oulu. And my friends had a DJ night there.
Oh, cool.
That's just a little callback. It was a shitty bar.
Yeah.
But I never knew. I just thought it was a made-up word.
Okay.
But maybe, but perhaps it explains like their decor. They had some weird like woodwork stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. Like birch or whatever. Yeah, Finns love wood.
Yeah, definitely.
Wood and paper and organic elements.
How about ham radio? Are you into ham radio?
Not myself, but as I was a kid and as I was actually, yeah, there's a guy who was our neighbor who had like a huge ham radio station.
Cool.
Like, really big one. So he was kind of a like a Obi-Wan Kenobi, like Yoda character.
That's so cool.
Who like told me more and more and more, taught me about components and stuff. His stuff was, yeah, it's actually probably kind of dangerous, like really high power stuff. But anyway, he was talking all over the world.
Yeah, ham radio is like really, it's just a world that I've learned a little bit about. Do you know anything about ham radio, Jamie? Uh-huh.
Big fan. Big fan. Variety of reasons. It's called ham.
Right.
First of all.
When the power grid goes down, that's what's going to save us, I heard.
Well, yeah, in a way, it attracts the same sort of types. I want to say like survivalists.
Yeah.
Survivalist hackers.
These are my people.
Yeah. Libertarian vibe. Yeah. But you know, our former public access panel member Kevin Driscoll actually is a big ham radio.
What's the ham scene looking like these
enthusiast.
Days?
Well, it's interesting. I feel like, frankly, it's like ripe. Like you could really do some interesting stuff on it. It's this weird dedicated band. It takes a little. It's like has like a barrier to entry. You know what I mean? And like it's a little more confusing because it's not a standard. Like people only think of radio. You don't even think of radio as like being able to broadcast. You just think of radio as like what comes into your car. You know?
Yeah. But the fact that it's almost like what he was doing, my neighbor was doing, this a sense of like a deep, vast space. It's almost like trying to reach another planet and putting calls out there, and suddenly, bing, like somebody comes to you out of nowhere.
Exactly.
It's a very weird
That's what they're searching for a lot of the time, Jamie, is you're trying to sort of contact people in these like, they've basically broken up the whole world on this map into like zones
and like North Korea,
like into really specific spots. So like an island in the middle of the Pacific will like be part of a zone. And so there's this, it's called de-expeditions. Well, no, what you're trying to do is like check off as many places on that map as you can. Yeah. Right. So contact people in like every sector of the world.
Yeah.
But what's crazy is that like, you know, these islands in the Arctic Circle, like, don't have a ham radio station, so people will go on these expeditions to go there and set up a broadcast, so and they'll like tell everyone in the ham radio community, they're like, all right guys, for the next 2 weeks we're going to the Galapagos Islands. If you need to check the Galapagos Islands off your like ham radio checklist, this is our call signal. And like
it's the ham bucket list.
Yeah.
Love it.
They're about it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, are you, it sounds like you were more maybe into music than broadcasting. Like, yeah, reach out and touch the audience.
I mean, I used to act in film and TV as a kid.
Really?
No, I started hating it. I would like to hear more about this.
Yes, please tell us more about your childhood acting career.
I was like a teenager. I was in some TV series first as an extra, and then I was kind of side character in a movie called Grand Illusion about Finnish artist in Paris, and I made bicycle. I rode with a bicycle to the Arctic Sea when Finland still had like Finland used to look like a lady, so it had like two legs and arms.
Uh-huh.
And there's a route to the almost to Murmansk, the Russian sort of submarine base. And in the movie, which was located in the 20s, I rode a bike there and then built radios, actually. I had like a frizzly long hair and looked like young Einstein.
Do you remember how much you got paid for that?
I have no recollection. Probably like really crappy salary. But I met really important people in my life through that movie.
Cool.
There was the only Finnish Oscar Academy member, Pappa Jurala, who was like he lectured in Skywalker Ranch and worked with Bille August and Max von Sydow in Jerusalem. And
who were those guys?
He worked in Sound Deluxe in Hollywood. He worked with Ridley Scott in Gladiator. He was kind of like a more important figure to me, like a mentor.
Yeah.
More important than my own father, almost, I have to say.
You know, wow. I was going to ask, was anyone in your family into technology?
Not so much. My mother is an actress and costume designer, set designer. My father was a graphic designer, nature photographer, and painter. Wow. So more like arts.
Artsy.
Arts. Yeah, more like arts. And some music from my mother's side.
Oh my God, were they hippies?
No, not really. Yeah, my father was kind of like a forest dude, like loner.
Sweet.
He was so asocial that he lived in Lapland like year round at some point, and even the tribal Sami people, they wanted to chat with him. He was like, no, he just escaped to the mountains.
Whoa.
Yeah, like hardcore.
Was he the one who turned you on a ham radio?
No.
That was the neighbor guy.
No, but the fact that Finnish, I think the reason why cell phones kind of exploded in Finland, maybe a little bit earlier than in the States, some people think it has to do with the distances and like long winter and nature, like huge distances.
Reach out and talk to somebody.
Yeah, they had to talk to somebody.
Huh. You know? Keep yourself from going crazy.
Yeah, it's like melatonin and serotonin kind of stuff. Yeah.
Crazy, yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Marco, we just got a question from the crowd from Mr. Theo Watson in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Right,
Theo. One of my students, yeah.
Right. Marco asks, Parsons. Analog or digital circuits?
Yeah. Oh, good question.
So. Oh, analog or digital?
Analog circuits or digital?
I'm leaning towards analog, actually. But that relates to my love with analog synthesizers. Not that I do have a digital synthesizer, like Korg Kronos 88X, which is a whole other beast, but I consulted a little bit for Moog Music early on Taurus 3 bass pedals, and I have to say that after I hooked that pedal up here after a fashion show to 5,000-watt PA system, the first note I played, I got tears in my eyes. It was so powerful. Emotional reaction.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so I do like analog, yeah.
Analog.
But I guess there was a question might relate to like this kind of like circuits and building and tinkering. It's for me it's pretty realistically a blend, actually. Yeah, it's all like context related stuff. Like I've been building some tilt sensor based glove devices and water conductive musical instruments and kind of tinkering with bass electronics and consulting a little bit for companies that make like infrared pickups for bass that pick up sound through the reflection from the string.
This is just a side hustle for you, like all this bass consultation.
It sounds schizophrenic, but I'm into it.
Well, we've talked about. I'm glad you touched on bass and bass testing.
I love bass
because, and now hearing a little bit about your past and like playing music and being into music production from the start, it makes more sense. Because somehow we always seem to end up talking about bass a lot, like on unrelated events.
Yeah.
So, you say so. How did you get how did you get your first like bass pedal consultation gig? Was it from being a sick bass player, or was it from being an electronics guy?
I was proactive, and I've been in touch with the Moog, and in general, just like seeing people in NAMM shows, and I guess it's all about like if you're truly into some stuff, then I think people sense that you are,
right?
And,
yeah,
and then you're like. Then there's degrees, like you can be possessive and like really crazily, and know a lot about it. I guess like people sense that energy, or they sense that you have something to contribute.
Who are some of your favorite bass players?
There's a huge spectrum, but I mean,
I really want to know a lot of them.
Sure. Let me see.
Well, maybe I could.
I as somebody who's seen Miles Davis several times live, I would say Marcus Miller is one, even though he's like very specific style, like.
What era Miles Davis are we talking here?
Well, this is more like electric stuff in kind of 80s.
Cool.
Mike Stern, his guitarist, is a good friend of mine and stuff. So Marcus Miller, early on, I used to be like on Jaco Pastorius.
It's a good foundation.
Yeah. Let me see. There's like a spectrum. There's like Sly and Robbie, like reggae stuff. There's a lot of... There's a great Cameroon bass player, what's the guy's name? He's been playing with Pat Metheny, and Richard Bona is like amazing. He's kind of like Esperance Spalding, like he can scat and sing troubadour while he's playing fretless bass.
Wow.
Just like water, like fluid.
That's amazing.
But I'm also into like simple kind of driving like Sulu jive, like South African bass stuff.
Yeah.
And just like synthesizer bass, I trigger myself with 5-string jazz basses, fret wired with the, like computer built inside, and a little display, and I can trigger Access Virus, any synth, Moogs from the bass. So kind of like mixing the string sound and mixing the synthesizer sounds in the pocket.
Do you record your own tracks? Do you play with anybody,
I've been recording some of my own stuff, but a couple last years. I played in a band called Varick, which is kind of like my friend Siskovich is a producer, remix producer, who's done a lot of stuff for like Gwen Stefani and Timberlake and Duran Duran, whatever. And he produced the band. It's kind of like Depeche Mode, Radiohead, Slash, tons of other influences. Not very nice stuff, but I've been playing live with the band. The Trigger. It's risky because trying to have a kind of rock band vibe while you're triggering MIDI notes, it's either you play with the MIDI tempo sync
or you're triggering
all the notes with hand, or when you play arpeggios and there's sometimes mistakes, it's not exactly in the pocket with the drummer.
Yeah, that's so it's really good. Actually, it's
whether
really
you good play quantized or whether it's raw or whatever.
Well, what do you guys do?
I took risks and played with, you know, the arpeggio starts with fingers. And I kind of got better.
Okay.
But we got another question from Mr. Watson.
Yeah.
For you. He's really
awesome. It's good, Theo. Keep him coming.
It's good. Full front. Yeah, we're open to any questions from the audience as well. If
anyone,
you guys are curious, we'll hand you a microphone.
Is that Dan the Man?
Got Dan the Man over here.
Well, Dan, we're going to take this question from Theo, I think.
I'll bring a mic over for you. Yeah, hit me. We'll go first.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, we got a wireless too. I guess we can. Dan, why don't you come up here and just and ask your question? Jamie, you want to introduce Dan, maybe?
Yeah, we have come up on stage. Sure. We have a fine gentleman here wearing an excellent hoodie. It's Dan the Man. Uh-huh. That's terrible.
Dan, yeah, Dan is like edition. I've never met you before.
It's great.
And you're like an IRC?
Dan I hang out on IRC quite a bit with these motherfuckers.
And he's a contributor to Scratch-O-Mal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm about the only one writing code right now.
He's the only one working.
I've got a question for you.
Sure.
So I play around with the Raspberry Pi a lot, and it's very compact, but if I want to like develop on the go and view it, how would I, what's the best HDMI capture device that I could use on like my MacBook Air?
HDMI capture device
I bought the Blackmagic, one of their boxes, but it doesn't work.
Oh, okay, I got it. Yeah, you said boxes rather than the box, which is a version of the Intensity video card.
Intensity Pro. It's the silver one.
Yeah, I would kind of. Yeah, it depends what you have. The box works with laptops, obviously, but it's like we've had the card version. There's a lot of people like live visualizers use the same thing to get the high def video into Jitter and like Max MSP. I've kind of used that box, sort of. Like, I like those boxes, just like I like Matrox triple head cards for, you know, getting super wide desktops and stuff. small little boxes anyway. Wait, what kind of stuff do you do? What do you do?
I don't know. I just play around with like open frameworks on the Raspberry Pi, trying to get it working right.
Yeah.
But like the problem I have is that I need one that doesn't have what's the encryption protocol?
HTCP.
I guess I need one that either strips it or doesn't have it, because I'm not sure if the Broadcom chip actually has.
It's a bit of a
encrypts the HDMI output.
Yeah, that part I don't yet have the same like knowledge. I have a few students who've been working on Raspberry Pis, working on actually like novel media players that relate to GIF art, which is like a funky project. I teach master's thesis studio at MFADT for 12 years. I've been there and really love that stuff, but kicking students in the butt for a year, fall and spring.
Raspberry Pi is kind of hot right now. I'm actually glad this came up, because it's been something that's kind of floating around. Yeah. And as someone that's more of an interloper than a coder, it's something that I feel. Do you guys think, for someone like me, like really sort of like entry level, I've tried a few languages of coding, I'm not super comfortable with
There's a bit of, that's a larger discussion of people's backgrounds. Like, one thing is someone is super geeky and techie, but then there's like artistic, technical, visual people don't necessarily, this is based on years of observation, don't necessarily jump as quickly even to Arduino as that they should. And that's a larger question of the syntax and what's in between the machine and you, and how much that design should come towards you rather than you having to come close to the design. Raspberry Pi, I think, is somewhere there. But if you really want to, like, in a Lego-like addictive matter, open it up for masses to do interesting content, I think there's some, not necessarily middleware, but some kind of like some kind of solutions to get people in. It doesn't have to be like overly moronically simple, but but do you know what I mean? It's there's all kinds of things that I think are still missing. Like interpreters or middleware or visual coding.
What people don't realize is that the Pi in Raspberry Pi stands for Python, and it was really originally designed to run Python very well, and it does that very well, actually.
Yeah.
And if you grab the Adafruit version of Raspbian, they actually have a really nice web IDE that you can run on your Windows box or Linux box or Mac, and then develop directly on the Pi and execute the code on the Pi.
Yeah, so is its advantage that it's like fairly full featured but really compact? And like, from what I understand in the projects people have been describing, it's like people have been using Raspberry Pi to sort of make these like boxes with like some sort of single task, essentially?
Input.
Yeah, well, it's an embedded Linux machine that runs a 700 megahertz ARM
processor
on it. With 512 megs of RAM, so you can design something that will boot Linux and only execute your project and have it run forever. Fairly stable. It's basically the guts of a set-top box.
Yeah.
If you think about like what your cable box is.
Yeah. Network connectivity, or a minor browser.
Or like a cell phone from 2 years ago.
Yeah. Which is still way more powerful than a computer they used in Apple 13.
Yeah, it's but like 20 times more powerful times than the first 30. Computer I ever owned.
It's cool. I mean, it's cheap and stuff, but I guess one thing is the speed and performance. The other thing is like what kind of interfaces you have for doing what kind of things. And I think that's something that needs to open up a little bit.
Right.
Outside of like, not everybody is Python coder, but there might be people with great ideas, and they should have access to those platforms too.
Well, I saw something last week. Somebody tweeted that they got processing working on the Java variant of Raspbian, which was kind of neat.
Wow.
And then the open frameworks community has been working on a branch that will apparently be merged mainline in the 08 release.
Wow.
And it's actually really, really powerful. We've got direct output to the frame buffer. We don't even run X11.
I'm a huge stereoscopic 3D freak. I used to work for Darren Lanier, kind of virtual reality stuff early on. But in general, I'm just looking forward to like all kinds of ways to synchronize, like 1920 1080 signals or 4K or immersive glasses. So I'm one of the people waiting for like Oculus or better been waiting for years, actually.
Do we want to jump back to Theo's question? What was?
Yeah, yeah. No worries.
So Mr. Watson asks, if you were to start a research project at iBeam, Marco, what would it be, and would it have an awesome acronym, e.g. BRAIN?
You mean like some kind of an acronym? Or anything? It's weird. Mr. Watson apparently is telepathic because like there's actually a lot of stuff in the air right now. So one of my passions has been for years has been to think about like cinema and like new forms of cinema and cinematic interfaces or methods of novel methods of capturing, editing, maybe compositing real time, or displaying cinema, interacting with multi-sensory aspects of that. And there's been, I mean, throughout the history of media arts, there's been all kinds of attempts there, and you could say there's like branches towards telepresence, virtual reality, augmented reality, gaming, theater, performance, all kinds of experimental stuff, and cinema itself, of course. And we had the kind of first sort of scratch in the surface was the new cinema hackathon, where there's like Golan and Zach and a few other people, and the Mike Cahill, director of Another Earth, and a couple guys who worked on the what's the movie, the horror movie, PPP, Paranormal Activity 3 and 4. But a lot of people used in the hackathon used Unity 3D, which was interesting in terms of like the history of interactive cinema, at least in like European art schools, has been like the cloud and tree-based structures of like 400 crappy QuickTime clips and linear clips, and then, like, you choose every 3 minutes for like the next bad clip.
Is Unity, sorry to interrupt, is Unity like the game engine?
Yeah,
I think I was learning about
one of
that
the highest end game engines.
Yeah.
Pretty modular and open, and people have worked on connecting, I mean, obviously connecting like Kinects and like kind of phase, OSC phase API type of things and input output devices and, you know, adding things. Stereoscopic support is Paul Bork, it's this guy, great guy in Australia, who's been also a lot in Hong Kong, like in kind of immersive cinema stuff, made all the routines to have Unity output 3D. And there's one guy in Lower East Side, Dave Pentecost, is a great guy, has a Unity 3D dome in a girls' school.
Cool.
It's like kind of dome projection system. Anyway.
What's the acronym for this cinema research brain trust? Cinema research, we're almost to cream already, so maybe we could. Cinema research, cream. Everything around me.
Something 60s and LSD, I'm sure. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm more for really pushing the boundaries in that field and hoping that IBM's vision research group guys and language research group guys, they've been very much into this, and RGBD toolkit has been one example, as well as a few other things like Siphon that's been developed here, built here further by what's his name, Antoved Marini. They're all sort of like small pieces of kind of like a bigger blob of things that's shaping, and I feel
cool.
Like a lot of these tools are kind of maybe forming the future of how indie filmmakers are doing this stuff anyway.
Hey Dan, thanks for coming and talking. I wanted to bring our other fat associate, other IRC lurker.
Thank you.
Love Monkey 4000. Can I give your government? Or do you prefer to go by Love Monkey?
Whatever.
It's Michael Auger, everybody. I just wanted to make sure you got up here and had a chance to speak your piece. You work in the security industry, is that correct?
Yes, I do.
Have you ever worked in the corporate security? You ever done any of that security-related stuff?
Security, no. I have had students who definitely have, like dark stuff and U.S. government or whatever, but not myself.
It's an interesting, odd world.
Do you want to speak closer to the mic?
It's an interesting, odd world. I have a lot of friends that work in that world.
Yeah.
It's fun stuff.
Yeah.
So Marco, how do you feel about iBeam's security? Can you comment on
it? Ooh, good question. Yeah, maybe perhaps
well,
Michael
one thing I guess is iBeam's water security.
Right. That's tough.
We had a major purge with Sandy. We got hit by 3.5 feet of water.
Built-in swimming pool.
Yeah, swimming pool. Yeah, lead acid, like floating around, salt water. But yeah, got definitely hit. Our gear got hit. We had most of the gear in like 2.5 foot high tables, which was naturally frustrating. So I think it's time to move the whole place to second floor from
sure.
now.
Sure. Wow.
Yeah. Some of my friends are like climate change people, and they think that the whole like Antarctica can crash and collapse a little bit.
So okay, so here we'll play a game.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so Michael.
Yeah.
You're gonna hack iBeam.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So I want you to identify some weaknesses, perhaps, in
the
like.
The door's open.
Yes.
Door's open.
There's a lot. The door is open.
Naive.
The room with all the gear is unlocked.
It's a public space.
Yeah.
I mean, more or less. I mean, it's sort of open. It's easy. It's done. It's over.
That's true.
Uh-huh.
How could you just bring everything to a screeching halt, like destroy all the computers and everything that was on the network?
Just go surge all the power.
Surge all the power.
Surge the power. Well.
Go throw, just take a railroad tie and jam it in the power outside and throw a railroad rail and the power outside where it gets distributed to the building and blow the transformer and hooray.
It actually happened once over a huge thunderstorm. Like the UPS box that was supposed to provide support for everything blew. Yeah,
causes problems.
Mercury retrograde. Anyway.
Yeah, what are some of the other heinous things that have happened here besides Sandy? Just some other crap that's gone wrong over the years in a spectacular way.
You could throw a chain over the power lines, too. That's actually kind of fun to do. A chain. Just take like a metal chain and throw it up and bridge two lines.
Is somebody writing this down?
Well, I'm trying to think.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it's every now and then. Blown gear, definitely. But I don't know if there's like a catastrophic failure outside of Sandy, maybe.
Sandy was
the most frustrating thing. I have to say, I personally...
Petty theft.
I wept like a baby when I stepped in here together with Jamie and after the... Oops.
Hello. He's just checking the mics.
Checking the mic.
Now it's better. Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
I mean, there is a long history of petty theft, obviously.
Yeah, well, it's
Security
like a laptop,
101.
Laptop per year, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, how many, what was that number?
It's like a laptop per year.
Laptop
per
year, that's pretty good.
That's not that bad.
That's pretty
good.
I thought you just had two and a Canon stolen.
That's the most recent thing. Yeah.
Is that, has it been 2 years? Be honest.
That was this year's theft. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely insiders, though. I mean, clearly it's an insider job.
Yeah.
Because Jamie
maybe
just
you
shows
guys.
Up with new laptops. Like,
having been here.
Hey, guys, look at my new laptop.
Yeah, let's do a little test.
Okay.
We have another question from the audience.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Marco, how do you feel about Gangnam Style?
Interesting. Was that from Theo?
It's Gangnam Style. It's
indirectly
it's
from Aaron Barthol.
It's a powerful, it's a powerful spiritual phenomenon that's going to unite the Koreas through sunshine policy.
This is deep.
Everybody's going to smile.
We got to get powder.
There's not going to be any nuclear missiles flying anywhere.
Yeah,
we'll be united telepathically.
Why are these people asking these questions?
So I asked this question last night. Huh. We had this performance by Ricky Laska with a 500-foot XLR cable, and. At the end, in sort of a debriefing session, we were talking about cabling and like cabling techniques. Mm. And, you know, I can imagine as the tech director, you might have some thoughts. I mean, some people say, that every cable has a natural coil and you have to like, you know, let it roll nicely. Or like some people are like, go around your elbow.
Not go around your elbow.
Okay, well, where do you fall?
Only if you're like angry and want to go home, then maybe.
So what's the truth? Tell me what the right answer is.
The truth is to let it kind of flow naturally.
And now
you need to feel it.
And
you need
to
be together with the cable.
But and when we refer to that natural coil, is that just the coil that it gets from like coming off a spool, or are we referring to like a higher like natural
it's
coil?
It's
going to
be,
you know,
higher.
I mean?
It's intergalactic, connection.
Golden ratio.
Subatomic particle physics, morphic resonance, be together with the cable. Yeah.
Yep. There is no cable.
Yeah, there is no cable. The cable
there
is
in
your mind.
No cable. The cable's
red
in
cable
mind.
Or blue cable.
This is getting.
Yes.
You mentioned that you have three alien contact moments in your life.
Well, that's a nice segue, by the way. That's super good. There's three occurrences in my life where I've seen things that are definitely breaking the laws of physics, one way or another. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
let's hear about it.
Just
really?
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
All right.
I was going to say, if there's any other remaining questions in the audience, we're now at the 5-minute mark remaining.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
In the program.
So.
Yeah. This is great.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, the first one was on a train coming from Tampere to Helsinki from my sister's place. One morning, 7 a.m., there's a big field, there's power lines, everyone's sleeping in the train, and I see a perfect lenticular disc floating in the air next to the power lines. And I see it for like 10 seconds, and suddenly it like moves with maybe, I see where it's going, it's maybe like 5-10,000 miles an hour.
Okay.
That's first. The second one is V-shaped. There's a meteor shower in Helsinki, like Leonids. And under the shower, there's suddenly like a V-shaped formation of super bright lights that goes like through the whole horizon in 3 seconds.
Zoom.
There's other people who saw that.
Like
too.
How many lights?
Like 7 lights, but like
in
a
formation.
Huge formation that goes through the horizon. Like zoom.
During a meteor shower.
Yeah, yeah. That's the second one. And the same lights were seen a couple days later in Australia.
Uh-huh.
And the same lights, I think, were pretty much Phoenix lights. Phoenix lights, it's a big thing. You know, Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, oh.
It's like an object floating.
I'd like to ask you a question, which is, do you believe in aliens?
Uh-huh.
And do you believe in aliens? And or can you otherwise explain the Phoenix lights?
Will you let him get to the third time in his life when he saw the aliens? For God's sake.
The third time.
This was getting so good.
No, you guys are super nice. The third time
I was
in Maui, Hawaii with my ex-wife. We're driving around the whole island. It was late at night. We're in black lava fields. There's like foxes and horses and everything coming. But no lights, nothing. Suddenly I start seeing like colored lights moving in the sky super fast, like with crazy movements, like on top of the neighboring island, and I tell my ex-wife, I'm like, look, those are freaking... I was like Richard Dreyfuss from Close Encounters. I was like, those are freaking aliens. And she's like, yeah, whatever. And it's so natural. And I was like, those are aliens. Suddenly she goes like, break, you fool, break. Then I break, like stop the car, get out of the door, and I noticed that while I've been watching the lights in the sky, I drove off the road, and the front wheel of the car was 2 feet from a 200-meter cliff straight down to the ocean, which basically it shows that it's aliens or not, it's good to concentrate on one thing at a time. It's either driving or aliens.
Wow.
I mean, you know the police car that went off the cliff in Close Encounters?
I've never seen that movie.
They fly off the cliff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they're watching the aliens?
Yeah. Anyway. So I would say my answer to the question is that my advice to you guys is to get your hands in the book that's in every fire station called The Fire Officer's Guide to Disaster Control, and go to chapter 13, which is the page 458. It's all fully on aliens and classification systems and recovery, electromagnetic effects, effects on physiology, power grids.
So this is like in every American
fire station? Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Still?
It's Benwell the second edition. Benwell Publishing, they use the book.
So you're sort of, would you generally say that like the government is aware of aliens and they're keeping it sort of under wraps or out of?
I'm not necessarily that, like, I don't belong to the kind of paranoid party there, maybe. I would say that British government opened all their files already and their national archives, including all the military reports.
Really?
They're all open.
Cool.
Yeah, open, you know, like I-beam, doors are open.
Yes, right.
It's all
right.
Open.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway. Yeah, we got a little bit beyond like regular technology here.
No, this is good. I mean, what kind of technology do you think?
I tell my students always, like, you can do anything you want, but it might take longer than you expect, and you need some alien technology.
Yeah.
Or outsource to another country, or get little hobbits to help you.
So you're endorsing alien technology to your students?
Well,
it's interesting.
If it gets the job done.
Maybe. Some days I think maybe it's already like here, but we don't realize it's here.
Mm-hmm.
It's raspberry
like
it's
sprinkling down somehow.
Cool.
That's a nice idea, at least. Maybe it's a crazy idea, but like, so there's some people who are like, transistor did not have any history. It just popped up out of nowhere.
Oh, whoa.
But whatever, you know. That's Bell Labs.
Yeah, and you could chalk that up to time travel, too.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
human
totally.
Time travel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not
yeah.
just aliens, yeah.
No, Benedict, no. Michael, you guys have any final questions for our guest, Mr. Marco?
Can you make me the circuit that I need? I need a 6 what channel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You should actually really ask him. This is a great person to ask. Oh, and it seems like we've got a ton of questions over here. But no, Michael, please, this is actually...
Yeah. Need a 6-channel USB audio input device.
Yeah, thank
High
you.
High fidelity.
Yeah, sure.
VIA well, makes a chip for it.
Okay. Yeah, VIA makes a chip, and then you have ADDA converters, yeah, and yeah. then you have some kind of signal
Well, yeah, VIA makes
switching.
A vinyl NV chip that has yeah. everything built in yeah. already. Yeah. I just need the circuit built around it.
Yeah, well, you need to get a chip and some kind of reference circuit and yeah. know what the inputs and yeah. outputs are and switching and signal conditioning and whatever. And if I had the PDF for the chip, I could maybe like design something around it, but surface mount, whatever. Yeah. Basically, industrial box. That'll take a longer time.
I know.
Yeah, definitely.
That's why I haven't done it. Yeah. I'm not
but
smart enough.
I've done some similar things, not at that level necessarily. That's like teams of people work on those things usually, yeah. actually.
Well, I'm going to give you guys each other's emails so you can cool. follow up on this. Okay. I think we have a question from James Powderly here.
Yeah, I have a question, a technical uh-huh. question.
Cool.
This is a very specific to a particular uh-huh. operating system, so uh-huh. I don't know if you have any experience, but I have an Android OS related question.
Uh-huh.
Is that within the purview?
You can ask anything. If I don't
yeah.
know, I'll tell you I don't know.
So I'm quite interested in this quantified self movement and self tracking. And uh-huh. so I currently wear a Fitbit to track myself and also use some tools like FUMF and OpenPaths to track my location and uh-huh. things and like log all this.
Uh-huh.
One of the problems I'm encountering is national software access boundaries. Uh-huh. So because I live in Korea, there's certain companies that produce applications that I can only get in the American App Store. So I've heard there's a few ways to do this,
uh-huh.
and one is there's an app called Market Enable, and Market Enable allows you to, you know, run
fluidly
your,
go anywhere.
You know, yeah, and so Market Enabler can only be downloaded on certain phones through the Google Play Store, and only in certain locales. So I can't get Market Enabler in my locality because my phone is Korean.
Mm.
So I need to root or sideload Market Enable on. The problem is the Galaxy Note 2 has for some reason cut off the ability to use it.
You
as
should
a
talk
USB
to the manufacturer about that.
I know.
Good zing, good zing.
Well. I'm just wondering how can I sideload Market Enable or some other comparable app onto my phone so that I can use the Fitbit produced app.
Talk to that gentleman.
There's probably other people.
Wait, sorry. This is a dumb question. I'm not understanding it. But like, couldn't you get someone to download Market Enable the app and like get it off their phone and send you the file and then just like put it on a micro USB or something
phone?
And just like
switch it
so
over
that
or something?
That would be sideloading it. I guess that's sort of the same as sideloading.
So is it?
What
is
I'm
it?
Saying is that they've got the Galaxy Note 2 is locked, so you can't plug it in as a USB
device.
External device.
Yeah. Anyway.
So even if you get a copy of this app, it knows you're in South Korea and won't let you.
Yeah.
Dan, do you want to come
so
up?
So wrong in so many levels.
We might be able to do this right now.
Fat Lab solving problems.
Yeah.
We
I
just
might,
had a claim
not
of
be able to necessarily
he's going
so
to do
much.
This right yeah. now.
Okay.
He's going to get the cost cable.
Cool.
You know, Marco, I credit this to your presence, if not directly from your actions.
Okay.
This solution that just happened.
We're going to sort it out. So it's the
were there other questions
energy.
Over there, Lindsay?
Do we have any other questions?
Or was that just James?
Aaron Bartol?
No.
Did someone else have a question, or was it just James?
It was James.
Okay, cool. They're trying to, they're going to fix
sorted
it right
out.
Now.
There's magic okay. happening right now.
This is great.
There's well, magic happening.
James, me, did you meet my buddy Jolly? He's so distracted.
Was that security? He's anyway. Fixing his phone. He's sideloading Market Enabler so that he can get
other
Fitbit.
Things. Yeah.
I forget the beginning of the question.
He should get things that aren't Fitbit
anyway,
that are better.
I wonder why he's so into tracking himself. I mean, James is a narcissist.
Quantified
so.
Self.
You are quantified so thing. Wrong.
Elastic, plastic that's mind, whatever. Yeah.
So did I had a question. So I have, it's an Android question actually too. I have a, what is this shitty phone? It's, no, it's not even that bad. What is it? It's the HTC Evo 4G on Sprint. It's an Android. I'm on a, I'm like grandfathered into a, everything plan or whatever, because like you can't even get that anymore.
Unlimited data?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I'm coming to the end of my contract. Now my girlfriend at one point dropped her phone on some cement, shattered the screen. So we went to like a store where they just like fix that for you for $100, like put a new piece of glass in there for you. And they did kind of a crappy job, and they like bent her speaker, and so like all,
oh,
all
the
this
metal
like
and plastic elements.
All this like
I've
dust.
Done,
yeah, it's like
I fixed my phone two times. The HTC, the first Google.
Oh, really?
Phone, yeah.
So
it,
yeah,
it cracked
like,
two times.
It looks
it was
like
a real bitch to open.
Oh man,
majorly not easy.
It but just looked like these guys took the thing over the speaker and just like popped it out.
Yeah, that's yeah. There's different ways to do it, but like the first Google phone, the people in like fixit.com or
iFixit.com.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like some of those people like they were able to take the phone into pieces but not put it back together.
Right, right.
And they give it a nice rating about how easy and difficult it is too.
Yeah,
it's phenomenally awesome.
But it's after a while, you do it too many times, it starts breaking otherwise.
Right. So she hates the phone. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know, give a crap about it. It like gets the job done, I guess. I guess the question is, when my contract runs up, should I just get an iPhone like everybody else? Like, is it really?
No.
Like, I'm going to have the same problems. And like my phone will like not work sometimes.
What are
right?
your problems?
Like, oh, I don't know. Like the map isn't loading. Like that's going to happen on any cell phone, right?
Happens on any phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
iPhone's got Angry Birds though.
I got Angry Birds.
My phone has Angry Birds.
Yeah, I think it's all.
I got
over.
Like seasons and whatever.
I didn't have to pay for
Angry
it.
Birds
I have all
everywhere.
The levels too.
Finland's gift to the universe.
Oh my God, Angry Birds is from Finland
it
too,
from
you
Finland.
Guys.
Yeah, I know. At Rovio, man. Rovio.
There's an Angry Bird theme park in Finland. My three boys are crazy about Angry Birds.
Oh, awesome.
They want Angry Bird cards. They basically like totally like.
Would you say that's like the? Is that like the like the thing that people aspire to in Finland is like Angry Birds? Or they identify a lot with
some,
Angry Birds?
Some, unfortunately.
Because, huh. Like, you identify with Nokia, you identify with Rovio,
not
Angry
so
Birds.
So much Nokia. It's kind of shifting and changing. Yeah, there's a feeling that Nokia had its moment and kind of Apple has pretty much destroyed them.
Huh.
It's rough.
Microsoft, there's a Microsoft boss right now, Elop, who it's people have very mixed feelings about him or his purpose of being there, really.
Rovio is a company everybody can be proud of.
What?
Rovio, everybody can be proud of.
Yeah.
We were saying
yeah,
they're
Rovio
like 80% merchandising now.
Yeah. Rovio, this Remedy, that's more like Max Payne or whatever. But they're doing some new video games also. Similar to Quantic Dream, Heavy Rain, Beyond.
Do you own any Angry Birds clothing?
No. My kids do.
Your kids?
I do,
unfortunately.
As well.
Yeah, I kind of think it's the time. Like, I think I need to get some in the next, like, 6 months.
Your window is closing.
What's that?
The window is
closing. I think it might be, you know.
You got to get, I scored a nice Chinatown Angry Birds knockoff hat.
Oh.
Hat, that's kind of
real nice. I feel like a bird when I wear it.
I just like feel like get in now.
You should get the Angry Birds socks.
Because 10 years, that's going
to
be good.
I can tell you something cool from Finland, along with like Suunto watches, Polar or whatever. But there's for seasonal disorders, SAD, there's a... another like Oulu University study. This company called Valke, V-A-L-K-E-E, Valke, which makes a small, it looks like an MP3 player, but it's basically a device that sends orange red light straight to your inner ear, through your brain,
cool.
through the optical nerve. So it will fix your sort of serotonin, melatonin.
That's amazing.
Balances and make you happy.
So it's like a happy light
months.
In your ear?
Happy light in your ear.
I've heard about them on like the back of your leg, but that's really cool.
Yeah, it works. So people cool. like they look like they listen to music, but they're not listening to music. Right. <It's> like
they're becoming happy. Like,
happy.
Well, speaking of being happy, David Huerta chimed in that he has both a Nokia N9 and Angry Birds.
Oh, great!
And he is not Finnish.
He's not Finnish.
He's
okay.
representing.
So apparently, it is legal for non-Finns also to own Nokia. So yeah. Sure. Okay.
Should we wrap it up?
We're over time.
All right.
Even though
great.
I'm
hey, thanks, Marco. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Talking to us. I just felt like, you know, like I always come. We only get to talk about tech stuff, like under the guise of like we have 5 minutes to set up something.
And this is broken.
And it's like this is broken. Like let's get this exhibit up. So thanks for coming in to work real late and just chatting with us.
Thank you.
Shooting the breeze.
Pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Jamie. Thank you, Jamie.
Oh, thank Bennett.
Thanks, Ellen 4K.
Very welcome.
Mike Lager.
Thank you.
So, that's going to do it for this tech talk. We're going to have one more program here on Fat Public Access tonight. We're going to be screening TPB AFK.
Are we playing the pirated version?
No, but I think what we're going to do is just put the camera like in the back and like film the screen.
But that's already been done. We have a copy of that.
I know. I was thinking.
We should play the cammed version.
Yeah. Do you think we should play the cammed version and then cam it again?
Cam the cam.
Do you guys think so?
Yes.
Yeah. I
don't think anybody's ever done that. So
sorry, Magnus. Magnus was like, "Don't play the cam one. It sucks to watch." But you're not here anymore, dude.
Yeah, it's an art project.
We're kind of going art project style. So stay tuned if you want to watch a recammed cam version of TPB AFK for the midnight movie here on Fat Public Access. Right on. Thanks again, Marco.
Thank you, Marco.
All right, everybody.